Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fast Talk.
Street Talk.
Mike Graham.
Fighting the good fight with all his might. Providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
See it, hear it, think it. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. It's the start of yet another week. Christmas is coming, you know, it's not that far away. A couple of weeks and you'll be right smack bang in the middle of it. I actually heard somebody in the lift last week say they'd been to a Christmas lunch. And that was even still in November, for heaven's sake. But there's an awful lot going on today. We've got Keir Starmer unveiling some plans that Labour may or may not want to have. Unfortunately, though, they're not his plans. They're Gordon Brown's plans. Gordon Brown, who hasn't been in government, actually, for quite a long time. He was the Prime Minister once, but he wasn't an elected Prime Minister, you might remember. When they did have an election, he got kicked out. Dragged kicking and screaming out of Downing Street. Never wanted to go. Well, now he wants to abolish the House of Lords, presumably because he's not in it yet. I don't know. John Rentoul's here to guide us through and navigate the choppy waters of whatever Labour's policy is. Keir Starmer's been doing the rounds today, doing a press conference this morning as well. Amongst other things, he's talking about giving more powers to the devolved parliaments around the country. And he's also talking about never letting Jeremy Corbyn back into the Labour Party in the sense as a Labour MP. He says he sees no way that that could ever happen. A lot of people fed up with Gordon Brown because this is a guy who, as I say, was kicked out of office quite some time ago and is now being seen to be advising Keir Starmer, a man who watched the World Cup last night in the same company as Gordon Brown, who's not actually English but was clapping along very politely. Lisa Nandy, who was supporting Great Britain, she didn't seem to know who was playing, and a couple of other people who didn't seem to know what was going on either. But let's not be too unkind to them because, you know, let's face it, the Tories aren't doing great either, are they? Are they doing anything? They've saved the economy, apparently. I didn't know that. We're going to talk about Raheem Sterling as well because he's come home from the World Cup because his house was the victim of a burglary. And so I'm going to ask you about burglary because there's an awful lot of crimes not being solved. Burglary is not being solved at all in this country. So if you have been burgled, I'd love to know what you experienced from the police, who are not exactly doing their jobs very well either. 0344 499 1000. Peter Hitchens is here as well. He's got plenty to say about a whole bunch of stuff. And we'll be talking about the online safety bill as well with Alan Miller. And let's not forget Meghan and Harry, shall we? They've put out their Netflix documentary. It's coming out, I believe, on Thursday. We've already seen a trailer for it. They've now put out, as part of the narrative, that they were hounded by photographers everywhere they went. And they've used a picture of why they were hounded by photographers and when they were hounded by photographers. Unfortunately, however, for them, it's not a picture of them being hounded by photographers. It's a picture of a Harry Potter film premiere, which they weren't at. Brilliant. So more lies from the Duke and Duchess of Netflix. We can look forward to that coming up soon. This is the Independent Republican Mike Graham. Let's get it on. And that's all before we start talking about strikes. The RMT rejected another pay offer at the weekend, didn't bother putting it to their members. The NHS as well, in the midst of a real problem with strep A. A lot of children getting strep A, quite a dangerous infection. Many of them so far succumbing, unfortunately, to it. So far, I think 7 children have been killed, have died of this strep A ghastliness. So we'll keep an eye on that story as well. John Renton is here, though. Very good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, imagine if you were Sir Keir Starmer and you pledged to do a whole bunch of things when you didn't have to. I mean, we were talking about this the other day when you were in. So you didn't really have have to do much, Starr. He just has to kind of stand around and wait for the Tories to self-destruct. But he's now decided to go the other way and actually come up with some policy. Why has he done that?
No. This is what happens if you're a politician and you put things off by announcing you're going to have a review or a commission. Mm. You appoint a commission. You appoint some grand old figure who's respected in the Labour movement, such as Gordon Brown.
Yeah, or you can't find one, so you get Gordon Brown.
to chair it. And then the problem is, 2 years later, Gordon Brown comes up with a load of stuff that would bog down a Labour government interminably.
Yeah.
And you have to pretend to be very interested in it. And so, yes, Gordon, it's definitely not on the shelf.
So this is 2 years of Gordon Brown sort of chin-stroking. He probably has to be hurried into it at the weekend as well. So could you please come on and get it out there? Because you remember Gordon Brown famously fastidious about every single detail. So probably it would never be ready.
Well, the reason it would never be ready was because it was being negotiated between Gordon Brown and and Keir Starmer's office for months and months, and they kept putting it off.
Yes,
but they finally decided they might as well announce this thing. But there's a huge argument behind the scenes because I think Gordon Brown's a bit miffed that this is going to gather dust on a shelf, which is because I think Keir Starmer thinks it's a second term priority.
Yeah, I mean, getting rid of the House of Lords is all very well, but plenty of
people... Well, it's existing Labour policy. That was the policy they fought the last few elections.
Tony Blair also abolished life peers, or said he was going to, but
hereditary peers. He did abolish almost all of them.
He abolished them apart from 99 of them for some bizarre reason. And
92. It was a deal he did with them. To avoid bogging down the Labour government.
Yes, but my point is that they said they would do something, they didn't do it.
No, he did do it. He did a huge reform. He got rid of almost all the hereditary peers.
But why didn't you just get rid of all of them?
Because he did a deal with them in order to avoid legislative
gridlock in politics, the House of Lords. But only in politics, as ordinary people listening to this conversation will admit, only in politics can you say you've done something you haven't done. He didn't abolish hereditary peers. Abolished almost all of them is not the same as abolishing all of them, is it?
Well, it's good enough.
That's like saying I'm banning all petrol cars except for those 10 over there and you can drive around happily for the rest of time.
Yeah, and most people would accept that, you know, nine-tenths of a loaf is better than no loaf at all.
Well, it may be better, but it's not what you said you would do.
Yes, it is.
Well, okay.
Broadly speaking,
well,
nine-tenths of what you say you do is not all a bad,
so if
not
I
a
borrow
bad
100
result
pounds,
in politics.
So if I borrow £100 from you, give you 90 back, you'll be happy with that, will you?
You know perfectly well that politics is the art of the possible.
This is why Labour will never be in power, now.
Well, no, Labour was in power and Tony Blair was a very effective Prime Minister. And the reason he was a very effective Prime Minister was because he did things that were possible instead of trying to do things that are impossible and that would bog down the government for years on end.
The last Labour Prime Minister was that was elected?
Harold Wilson.
Yeah, so quite a long time before that.
Harold Wilson, who said that England only wins the World Cup under a Labour government.
Yes, so far he's been proved
I wonder if he's going to be proved right this time.
Well, you do well. They're playing France, which could become quite difficult. Also, the big story that's coming up at the weekend, came up at the weekend, the RMT sort of rather cleverly rejected another 8% pay offer, I think it was, during the World Cup match, so nobody would actually notice. But unfortunately, we noticed when we woke up this morning. Yeah. But apparently there's going to be more talks. But he hasn't been very bullish about the union situation on either side, really. He's just basically...
Keir Starmer. He retreats into that old formula about, you know, they should get round the table.
Yeah.
And actually, to be fair to Mark Harper, the new Transport Secretary, that's precisely what he has been doing.
Well, they have been.
He has been getting round the table. Yeah. He has been prepared to talk to Mick Lynch. Mm. So far, it hasn't produced any results,
rejecting the offer.
Well, yes, but Mick Lynch has said encouraging things in the sense that, he says that there has been some movement.
It's another one of those Labour arguments, isn't it? There has been some movement, but not enough movement.
Well, let's see.
Nine-tenths of a loaf is better than 10-tenths of a loaf, or better than nothing.
Well, better than
Mick Lynch obviously doesn't agree.
Well, we'll see. Mick Lynch is a negotiator, and I suspect...
Well, you could call him that. I've got another name, which I won't use right now. He is all about just keeping on with the strike. You know, there was talk at the weekend
of
cancelling the strike for Christmas, right? And so far, he still hasn't. So people can't make... And the problem with the way the RMT operates is that they can't, if they do cancel it and say, we've done the right thing, they'll do it so late in the day that people's plans will have already been ruined and they won't be able to do anything about it.
I think that is that is a problem. You can't fault a trade unionist for trying to maximise their leverage.
No, you can't. But I mean, I think that with all due respect to him and to you, there's a point at which you pass muster with the public. And I think if you've got the public's sentiment, which I think you did have at the beginning,
I think
you
still
can
does,
do a lot. You can go a lot further with what you want to do.
Absolutely.
But I think he's lost most of that now.
Well, that's the balancing act he's treading, and he's got to be very careful about it. I mean, that's precisely why. Possibly, they rejected the deal in the middle in the middle of the football match.
Yeah, well, precisely. So he's trying to be a bit clever there. Now we've got a clip that I want you to have a look at because this is great fun. Are we ready with this? Let's have a look at this. I would give her the job today. I mean, I have to say, Angela Rayner doing a DJ set. I think it was for some sort of charity in Manchester with Andy
Burnham.
I mean, that's why people like Angela Rayner, isn't it?
Because she's real.
Despite the fact that she's blocked me on Twitter, I still quite like her.
Has she?
Yeah, she has.
You shouldn't block people because that makes it look as if you care.
Well, I also don't think that, you know, elected officials who are paid by me and other people who pay taxes should be blocking journalists.
No, no, no. You should just mute them and then they never know.
That's what David Lammy's done.
Much clever.
That's what David Lammy's done because he's a bit cleverer than her, obviously. But the bottom line is that people do identify with Angela Rayner, even if they don't particularly like her.
Yeah.
You know, she's a real sort of human being. I think if Starmer stood aside and gave her the job, they'd be elected tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I thought, I don't know about that. But there was a lot of nonsense on Twitter about how undignified it was for a politician to
Think it is.
She's doing that.
I don't agree.
I just didn't understand it. No. I thought she looked like she was having a good time. She was. She looked like a normal person.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And I bet you, I'll tell you something, I bet everybody who was in that venue watching it will vote for her as a result of that because they'll go, well, she's one of us.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being one of us, is there?
Absolutely not. Well, they're all Manchester anyway, so they're probably
all
Labour voters.
Yeah,
anyway.
They all stick together. Andy Burnham was there as well. I'm glad we didn't have any video of his set, which would have been incredibly turgid. He'd be wearing another one of those sweaters from the 70s.
Well, I remember he used to.
New order, as Aaron just said.
He used to be a fan of the Smiths. And
heaven help us. Yeah. Well, he can't be any more, though, can he?
No,
because
he's not.
Now everybody hates, what's his face?
Morrissey, yeah.
Morrissey, he's gone all right wing.
He has, yeah. So,
yes. Well, there you go.
But Andy Burnham, last time I saw Andy Burnham, he said the Smiths weren't as good as I thought they were.
Not the first time he's made
a
U-turn.
Heresy from a Mancunian.
No, you can do it now because Morrissey is universally detested by the left, so that's okay. But we'll talk about Jeremy Corbyn coming up, and also we've got to talk about Matt Hancock's diaries, which is another thing that Keir Starmer had something to say about. We'll be taking your calls along the way as well, 0344 499 1000. This is Talk TV, I'm Mike Graham.
Nationwide, by your side, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. John Rentall is here from The Independent, of course. We're talking about Keir Starmer and Gordon Brown's plan. And he's kind of, as you've just rather well explained, dropped himself right in it with this Gordon Brown plan because presumably there's bits of it he may not even like, but he has to sort of present it as though he agrees with all of it.
I mean, I do think there's a fundamental problem with this idea of, you know, that what the British Constitution needs is more devolution. I mean, devolution has caused endless problems to the Labour Party.
Yes.
It's killed the Labour Party in Scotland. And so the idea that what we need is more of it, I just think is for the birds. But, I mean, everybody feels they have to say it. Keir Starmer feels he has to sort of nod to it. But, of course, you know, once he's in government, he's going to have much more important things to do than to tinker with the Constitution.
And he's presumably going to have to fight off any attempt by the SNP to actually, you know, get another referendum on independence, which they're never going to give up on.
Well, quite.
Because it's a good fight for them to keep having, isn't it? But, you know, the other problem for Scotland and for Keir Starmer is that they've already given more powers to Scotland than they
absolutely.
Use. You
know,
they've got tax raising powers now that they don't use. They could put a penny on income tax if they wanted to.
Yeah,
but they haven't.
Well, they do use it a bit at the margins.
Yeah.
The higher rate in Scotland is 46% instead of 45%.
Right.
For
but
example,
this is what I'm saying.
But I mean,
they,
that is.
But they could do that in every area. They could put a penny on here and a penny on there, yep, you know, but they don't do it for whatever reason. Let's talk about private schools as well, because he got himself in a right old muddle over that, didn't he?
Well, he ended up saying how wonderful private schools are, which is why he wants to tax them into the ground.
Right.
It didn't make a lot of sense. I thought he was going to come a cropper on that one.
Yeah.
And he has, because he can't explain why he thinks that people should pay more, pay VAT on private because school fees. He says it's not fair.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, people who
but he then can't explain why it's not fair, can he?
Well, because other things have VAT on them. Right. But then actually anything to do with education doesn't have VAT.
So university fees don't have it, do they?
No.
And sort of any other colleges.
But anybody can go to university.
Well, that's
in theory.
Well, anybody can go to private school in theory. You know, you just have to have enough money.
Yeah, but university you don't. That's the whole point.
Well, you do now.
No, you don't.
You can't go to university unless you've got money.
No, that's not true, Mike.
Really?
As you well know. And in
fact, it is actually, because that's why so few
people... Since the loan scheme was brought in, a far greater proportion of...
Yes, but many, many more people go...
Students go to university.
But it's a very small number compared to the middle class who go, almost in 100% in its entirety.
No, but it's more than before. So you're not right to say you need money to go to university.
Well, you kind of do, because if you haven't got rich parents, you're less likely to go. It's as simple as that. It's the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, you're more likely to go now than you were before.
Yeah, but that's not argument about hereditary peers.
No, it's not.
Some more people are going, but anyway, by and large, it's still difficult to go to university if you haven't got parents who can afford to benefit you while you're there.
That's true of everything in life, but actually you can go to university if you don't have
When I went
rich
to university,
parents.
And possibly when you did, then it was actually possible for anybody to go, because all you had to do was qualify, because it didn't cost you any money at all, and you got a grant while you were there. Whereas now, you've got to borrow money, and inevitably you've got to use your parents' money as well in order to subsist.
That's not quite true. You can borrow money to subsist as well.
Well, you can borrow as much money as you want, but in the end, that's not going to be good for you. But, you know, the problem for Starmer over the schools thing, to me, is that he basically kind of fundamentally wants to ban public schools, doesn't he? But he can't, because he realises that's not a vote winner. There are people in his party who think public schools should be abolished.
Yes, I'm sure that's right, and he may even have said that himself in the past. But he said all sorts of things in the past that he doesn't say now. I mean, he was asked about Europe. He was asked whether joining the single market would make us better off, and he said no.
Right.
I couldn't believe my ears. he then realised that was a slightly embarrassing answer, and he tried to sort of backtrack on
to
explain
in an one-on-one interview situation.
You would have thought he'd have better prepared answers to these rather obvious questions.
Yeah.
Than he does.
But he doesn't strike me.
Right.
And we've seen this in PMQs as well. He doesn't seem to be particularly quick at being able to change and manoeuvre his position, which for a politician, particularly a leading politician, somebody who leads the party, is pretty awful.
Well, but what's more worrying about it is that it suggests he doesn't know what he thinks.
Yes.
Because, I mean, someone like Angela Rayner, for example, is never lost for words, because she knows what she thinks, and she, you know, she knows what her view is on things, and sometimes it leads her into trouble because she says things which are not politically convenient for her to say. But he's far too careful. Never says anything politically.
And I don't think it's necessarily that he doesn't know what he thinks. I think that he doesn't want other people to know what he thinks, because what he really thinks actually is probably unpalatable to most Labour voters.
Well, except that he would, as you say, he would like to abolish private schools, really. And he would like to go back into the European Union.
No,
really.
I don't think he would. I think he'd probably like to send his own kids to private school, but he hasn't, because he knows that would be a bad idea. But I think he actually would rather like to keep private schools, but he thinks the party would like him to abolish them.
Right.
So that's why he's found this ridiculous middle ground, which has got him absolutely nowhere and stuck in no man's land. Same with Jeremy Corbyn. You know, although he did manage to say today he doesn't think he could see any circumstance under which Corbyn could stand as a Labour MP.
That sounds fine to me.
But why can't he kick him out of the party then?
Because it's too much trouble. I mean, you know, if he's not going to be a Labour MP after the next election, then it doesn't matter how you achieve it. You just ignore him.
Well, surely if he can't stand as a Labour MP, he shouldn't be in the Labour Party.
He isn't a Labour MP.
But he's in the Labour Party.
Yeah, I know.
Why can't he kick him out?
But nobody cares.
Well, I do. I care.
Yeah, but you're a troublemaker, aren't you?
I am not a troublemaker. That's an outrage. Absolute rubbish.
I think he's in much more trouble where he has departed a millimetre from from Tony Blair's line, which is to go for people who send their children to private schools.
Yes, absolutely right. And I've got this to point out to you from Howard Cox, who says, don't forget Gordon Brown told us to move to diesel to save the planet, made it the most popular vehicle fuel that gave rise to higher prices and taxes, and then it became the pariah that the eco-zealots want abolished. Well, that is true as well.
Well, everybody thought that diesel was greener. Until they realised it wasn't.
Yeah, but who told them it was greener?
I think that was the scientific consensus, briefly.
Oh, right. So the scientists told us. Yeah. And then they got it wrong.
Yeah.
That's funny,
Then they had to reverse.
How extraordinary. I'm being asked as well to ask you what you can tell us about the SNP and why Ian Blackford actually finally stepped down. I mean, I think we all know that he had reached a kind of the end of the road, really, with some of his colleagues in Westminster. They didn't like his defence of the guy who was accused of things that turned out later to be true, etc. Is it as simple as that?
I think it is. And I think it's as simple as the explanation that, you know, student politics is so vicious because the stakes are so small.
Yeah.
You know, the SNP at Westminster is a pointless institution because, I mean, they're all in a parliament that they don't
want to be in.
They don't think they should be in.
Right.
So, you know, what is the point of them apart from sitting around plotting against each other and manoeuvring? And that's precisely what they've done.
Yes, exactly right. How about this from somebody who says, Sue in Cheltenham, most things I agree with you, Mike, but the having money and university I don't. I'm a single parent and cannot afford to subsidise my son at all. He's in his third year at uni, has two part-time jobs and is completely financially independent from me. Well, that's good.
Absolutely.
So he's good working. So he's working his way through university, as indeed I did.
Yes, I mean, you know, obviously, I'm in favour of more maintenance grants for people who don't have rich parents.
Yeah.
But my point stands that, you know, you can.
No,
go,
listen.
You,
I'm if, sure there are
if
plenty
you qualify,
of people.
You can go to
I'm
university
sure there are plenty
regardless
people,
of your.
There are plenty
means.
Of people like Sue who have got kids who are financially independent, and there are plenty of people. Who are not like Sue, you know, one point does not disprove the other. The point is that you're more likely to go to university if you've got wealthier parents because it's less of a hardship for you and less of a hardship for them.
Yeah, but all I'm saying, Mike, is that people argued against the loan scheme, saying that it would prevent working class people going to university.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. It's had the opposite effect. Mm.
So now there's just more people with useless degrees. But that's not.
Well,
the story.
That's completely
that's
different
a different
subject.
Story. Let's finish up with Matt Hancock. He was back in Parliament last week with his dyslexia bill.
Yeah, he mentioned dyslexia.
Yeah, he's making a fortune from this book he's written, despite his dyslexia. And what next for Matt Hancock?
Well, he doesn't have a political future ahead.
I don't think so.
I assume he wants to be on TV a lot. I'm not sure the nation has taken him to its heart.
I don't think it has.
Although, you know, everybody says, "Oh, well, you know, actually, they've seen a sort of better side of him in
I'm not sure
celebrity.
That's true.
I'm not sure it's true either.
No. I mean, there are a lot of sort of commentators who tend to be television commentators rather than political commentators who think he was quite popular. But I think in the context of a game show, that's one thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he's popular. Like, you're not going to give him This Morning to host, are you?
I'm afraid I just don't understand I'm a Celebrity. I mean, I had to watch it.
I don't
I had
watch
to watch it,
at all.
It obviously.
Never
for,
have.
For work purposes.
Yeah.
But I mean, Ed Ball's on Strictly, I can understand. I mean, I can understand what Strictly Come Dancing is about because that's a dancing competition. And I thought Ed Balls on that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And it did him no end of good. But I'm
because
a celebrity.
People thought
just...
he was boring, and now and now they quite like him.
Yes,
but they didn't hate him in the way that Hancock is hated by people. You know, which hasn't changed.
And sliding around having water hoses squirted at you doesn't. I mean, why should that make you popular?
No, I know. I know, unbelievable. Anyway, gentlemen, we're out of time, unfortunately. We found some common ground, as we always do. We'll be back. We've got more to talk about, including Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Netflix. This is Talk TV.
Talk radio. Exhalation. Conversation. Confrontation.
It's not all bad news.
It's Talk Radio.
The home of common sense.
On your mobile, on your wavelength, Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We've got lots to talk about. Mark Sagers is here. We're going to get stuck into the World Cup and much else besides in a moment. But first, let me tell you about something that happened over the weekend, right? I decided that I had to change my car over because it's that time of the year. It's 3 years has gone by. I lease my cars, as everybody probably knows. Anyway, I just thought I'd talk to my car insurance company. I'm not going to name them. And I said, look, here's the thing. I need to keep the other car for a short period of time because it's got to be handed back to somebody else. It's all, you know, one of those. It's all pretty straightforward stuff. And I said, I've got this other car. So they said, well, probably the best thing is to get a new insurance deal for the new car and just keep the other car on as a kind of a secondary car. And we won't charge you for cancelling the policy because you're renewing another policy. I said, oh, that's very kind of you. You know, so you're not actually going to take any more money off me. So they went through a process of trying to get insurance for this new car, which is more or less the same price as the other car. It's not particularly a better car, you know, it's just the same kind of area. You know, it's not a cheap car, but it's not ridiculous. And they came up with a quote, the like of which almost had me, if I hadn't already been sitting down, I think I would have fallen down. It went from what I pay now, which is somewhere around about 1,200, 1,300 a year, to 6,000. 6,000 quid! I said, are you joking? They said, oh yeah, the underwriter doesn't like this this car. I said, well, what do you mean, doesn't like it? So I thought, is this what I'm going to have to do? Is this, you know, is this now the new world that I live in? And of course, I said, well, leave it with me. I'll tell you what, give me 24 hours, I'll come back to you. So I went on one of those compare the market type sites and got one for exactly the same price I'm paying now. So what I'm asking you is this, how is it possible that insurance companies that do the same job with the same vehicles to the same people can have such a wide variation? How can it go from about 1,200 quid over here to £6,000 over there? I don't understand it. It's meant to be a regulated business. It seems ridiculous to me. I mean, if they don't want to insure it, shouldn't they just tell you? Because some people might be, unlike me, might just go, oh, OK, if that's the price then, I'll just pay it. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
Anyway, Mark Sagan, what do you make of that?
Well, it's the underwriter, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other thing is, what do you say that your profession is?
I tell the truth, obviously.
Well, I mean, broadcaster or company director?
Company director.
Yeah.
That's what I am.
Yeah, because if you start going down the broadcaster route, they think that we're crashing into everybody all the time, and that ups it. So perhaps your underwriter's seen you on here and thinks, oh...
Well, the other one hadn't, but so thanks for outing me. I mean, Saggers comes in here, ruins my life.
No, look, I hate cars. I failed my test 7 times.
Did you?
On one occasion, I hit another car on my reversing back round the corner.
Actually on the test.
And just got out of the car.
That's
and
brilliant.
Had a fit.
That's fantastic.
And that was that, really.
Yeah.
Didn't pass my test.
I never
I
liked
30.
The emergency stop. You know, where they slam the thing on the dashboard and you go, oh!
I can't drive, really. I'm not very good. I mean, I've just got myself one of these little second-hand Fiat 500s now.
A bit of road rage you'd get, wouldn't you? Would you get a bit of road rage?
I don't anymore. I wave everyone through. But in the past,
yeah.
I remember on one occasion, my daughter was about 1.5 with Jane. We're in an old Rover, and
right.
I was driving. And a bloke, open-top Bentley, red,
right.
with his beautiful lady alongside
blonde.
Him and
yeah.
everything, cut us up at the traffic lights.
Right.
I'm window down. I'm really going at him. We then drive into some sort of shopping arcade.
Right.
He pulls up next to me, takes his watch off, does up his sleeves. He's going to whack me.
Blimey.
So,
that's not good.
But that's my,
did you manage
that's
to calm
my
down?
Sort of life. No,
well, yeah, absolutely right.
Well, I've never was calm in those days.
Well,
I'm much calmer now.
Well, thank goodness for that. You weren't very calm the other night with Jeremy Carl. You're back with him tonight, I think, aren't you?
I can't wait.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So what a game last night,
though. What a game. What a game.
And what, you know, what it struck me was that they can learn now, this team, can't they? They can actually learn what they're doing while they're playing, which they never used to do.
They can play. And what we're so good at is going forward.
Mm.
Let's forget about the nonsense of defending at the back. Yes, we've got to do that as well.
Yeah.
But don't hold on to what you've got.
Yeah.
Go further. We've got to play Jeopardy in the rest of this World Cup.
Right.
That's the only way we'll win it.
Well, France will be a very, very different
yeah,
cup
very,
of tea, won't
very.
It?
Yeah, very, very. But, you know, they've conceded goals in every game they've played. We have got some real talent going forward.
Yeah.
And for Jordan Henderson, who Stuart Pearce on Talk Sport, who've been obviously cover every single game, was saying, you know, sometimes it's the ugly duckling, as he called him, that nobody like don't really see the work that he did on that pitch
yes.
last night and the way he got himself into a position to score that.
And that
first
was a great goal. That first
yeah,
goal,
only his third for England.
I mean, as good a goal I would say that I've seen England score for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Who were they playing, by the way, last night?
Yeah, I mean, there was a great moment last night. I was watching you and Kevin. It's already been put into the bank for the end of year party.
Yeah.
Where neither one of you could remember who England had played last
no.
before last night.
No.
But I was more worried that there wasn't anybody in the booth giving you any information. You know, where the hell were they?
No, well, we were just sort of open mouth, just sort of looking at each other.
Because it can happen. I mean, it is one
all
of those
the
things.
Time.
What doesn't happen normally, though, is that both of you don't know. I mean, that's quite unusual. I mean, that was pretty funny.
It was.
If you haven't seen it, we might direct you to it later. We might even play it out later. Very good. But anyway.
Can I, before I talk about
yes.
the football, talk about Harry and Meghan?
Yes.
From a different point of view, I've thought an awful lot about this and everything that's going on. And Harry is deeply disturbed still. There is no doubt it is all to do, as far as I'm concerned, with losing his mother at a young age.
Right.
My mother was ill all the way through my teenage years, and she died as well, young.
Right.
And my father remarried. And
hard for you?
Yeah, we never got on with our stepmother.
Right.
Or anything, but I think as well that he's protecting Meghan in the way that he wanted to protect his mum.
I think there's a lot of that going on. It seems as though she's kind of become his substitute mother.
There is almost, there's seemingly a lot of that going, which is a sad and difficult thing. She's obviously very powerful PR runner, and he has escaped. Remember, when you also escape from something, if you don't actually look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself the truth, you go along with what other people are telling you.
Yeah.
And I think that some of these things they'll regret in the longer term. But, you know...
When he talks about protecting his family, which I can understand on one level, however, his family's also here.
Yeah.
And what about them?
Yeah.
He's not
but
protecting
he was,
them.
He was only ever, as he said, the spare. And then
I think he's being a bit disingenuous there. I mean, the Queen loved him. He had a great relationship with her, right?
Yeah.
He says he didn't have it with his father because of Camilla. Understandable.
Yeah.
But he had a really good relationship with William for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And that's all gone now.
Yeah.
And it's because of her.
I think, to me. I think it is a lot to do with her, but he's gone along with it because I really do feel he's going to play out now what others couldn't do to his mother, which was look after her.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where it ends. I think
at
some point he will wake up one morning and go, "Blimey,
I just hope whatever we'll I mean, I can't wait to watch it. Everybody says, "Oh, everyone's going to get fed up with this."
Mm.
We've got relations in Australia who can't sleep waiting for this Netflix documentary.
Have a word.
But the whole of Australia are like that. That's what they're like. Sorry.
Well, I'm not.
No, I
have trouble waking up.
You're not going to... Everybody will watch it, even though they said, by the way...
I don't think I'll get
through. By the way, you have never, ever watched a game of football at home or with friends and stood up and clapped at the television.
What, you mean like Keir Starmer?
Oh, I've never seen anything so pathetic in all my life.
And what's he doing there with Gordon Brown, who's not English, right, pretending to enjoy it? He's a Raith Rovers fan, Gordon Brown. We've got old...
Gordon Brown, when he was in power, along with Charlie, his sidekick... They warned me off when I was working, saying that I was not saying things that were right about the government when it came to football.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, he was a bit of a bully.
Yeah,
also, of course, Lisa Nandy wearing a great...
I didn't take any notice.
...wearing a Great Britain shirt. Neither should you.
No.
I mean, somebody called him here the old Nokia chucker. Because, you know, he's famous for throwing phones at people. Anyway, listen, we're out of time. You have to come back and talk about the football.
All I will say about the football is England were great. Keep it going.
Yeah.
Play that way against France. You got every chance. Don't think about defending. Jeopardy. Put yourselves on the edge and carry on.
There we are. The World According to Mark Saggers. It's a good one. This is Talk TV. Peter Hitchens coming next.
Edgy talk. Plain talk. Unrivaled talk. Mike Graham. The only radio show you can count on for a proper serving of good old-fashioned common sense. In search of the perfect debate.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
See it, hear it, think it. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. We are well into now the, I suppose you might call it the second week of December, although technically it's only the first week of December, since last week it wasn't December when the week started. But, you know, I don't want to be pedantic about it. Peter Hitchens is here. We're going to be talking about a great many things, including the cancel culture at Buckingham Palace, of course. You thought that story had gone away, but it hasn't. We'll talk a bit about Ukraine as well and a new book that's come out. And also, of course, I'll be hearing more of your stories about burglary because poor old Raheem Sterling had to come back from the World Cup in Qatar because people thought he and his family were away, which should tell you something about not posting too many pictures on Facebook when you're away, in case when you come back, you'll find that your house has been burgled and broken into and everything's been stolen. Also, we'll talk a bit about car insurance. Why on earth is it so expensive to go to one company over here when you can go to another company over there for exactly the same service, which costs about a third as much? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's one of the most bizarre situations, I think, in any consumer arena that I can think of. So if you can explain it to me, I'd be most grateful. 0344 499 1000. John from Chingford says, if Starmer throws out Corbyn from the Labour Party, Corbyn will split the Labour vote if he stands as an independent for London Mayor. Then hopefully we'll get rid of Sadiq Khan. Well, that's quite a thought process, isn't it? I don't know about that. And Leslie in Cheshire says, Mike, hypocrite Starmer. He campaigned for Corbyn to be our next Prime Minister, knowing his history, and he now tries to distance himself from Corbyn. Well, that is a fact, I have to say. Peter Hitchens is here.
Morning.
Very nice to see you. How's
Likewise.
It going?
Yeah, I was struck by something this morning. The coverage of the awful raid on a footballer's home when he was away. It seems to be all about football.
Yes.
To me, it seemed to be a horrible symptom of how dangerous this country is now for everybody.
Yeah.
An armed raid on somebody's home in Surrey is what's...
Yes, somewhere near Cobham.
An armed raid.
Yeah.
On somebody's home in Surrey.
And nobody bats an eyelid,
it's
do
just,
they?
It seems to be passed by as a normal event like the weather, whereas yes. The effect on the football is huge. I am slightly baffled by this. We should be much more alarmed.
Well, the reason
the
you're
level
hearing
of crime
pages of newspapers being torn is I'm looking for this particular story. It's during the mail today. 100 violent crimes a day shelved by the police.
Yeah, just so they just take no action on 100 violent crimes. And we knew this would happen when they started ignoring what they called... what do they call it? Minor crime.
Yes.
It's never minor crime if you're a victim.
Well, burglary is never a minor crime.
Burglary is never
having
burglary
been a victim
can
of it, it's awful.
Burglary
it's one
can
of the most
kill
awful
people.
Things,
it
yeah.
can make them so unhappy that they die. And all the other things, being mugged, having your neighbourhoods full of shouting yobbos, they ruin lives. The police treat them for years as trivial. They do nothing about them. Mm. Now we move on. The things which even they admit are serious being ignored. I think that's huge. And
I agree, we have to be very
discontented about
it. Yeah, and I mean, you're right, because we've also become slightly kind of inured to it all, haven't we? We just kind of go, oh, well, another armed raid. But the thing that really stuck out for me in this piece is how many days off people have had in the police because of what they're calling a mental health crisis. Accounted for 571,000 days off work last year.
Well, good heavens, yes.
Half a million.
Another whole new discussion, isn't it, about how we now treat what might once have been described as unhappiness or discontent or a bad day. I don't know how you could possibly justify that level of absence myself, but I'll be told that I'm cruel and inconsiderate.
Yes, of course you will, but it is an epidemic, I'm afraid.
Well, the thing is,
it
doesn't matter what the cause is. If the police, if this is how the police treat these problems, then they need to be better at organising themselves. Mm. The police at the moment, their most fundamental characteristic is absence.
Yes.
They're just not there, and an absent police force is as much use as an unarmed army.
And very, very often the same argument can be made about the NHS, because we're told the NHS is short of staff, but one of the reasons it's short of staff is an awful lot of the staff aren't working because they're off sick.
Yeah.
You know, for one reason or another.
There's a huge turn away, I think particularly among women with children, from what was supposed to be the great joy of going out to work. Mm. Having discovered during the Great Panic that they weren't actually gaining all that much by being at work, and the huge costs of childcare, which they were no longer paying, compared with what they were actually making by going out to work. I wonder if there isn't a quiet revolution taking place, particularly among women, saying, actually, I'm not sure. Is it worth all this? Is going out to work just so important when I could be raising my children?
Well, there's an awful lot of people.
It should be a good thing, because it's better if women raise their own children, in my view, by a long way.
Yes. But you'll be accused of being sexist.
Well, I'm honestly...
I mean, you're going for the full cards.
I don't mind. If one parent is at home, I don't mind which sex they are. I think it will generally be women, but it won't always be women. But it's fine by me. I just think that children should be raised by their parents.
No, I mean, there's no doubt. There's lots of people who are now, particularly young people, who are talking more about a work-life balance. They don't want to work as hard, perhaps, as we did. I rather like working hard. I don't mind it.
No, but
a lot of people don't like it.
The thing is, a lot of women who find a pressure like working hard, but they also like being with their own children, and that's the reason why this has been for a long, long time the propaganda and the moral pressure has been go out to work, go out to work, go out to work. And the whole idea that raising the next generation was actually a satisfying and valuable task has been chucked to one side. Well, maybe
it's coming back.
I can only hope maybe that will be reconsidered now.
Yes. Funnily enough, John Rentzel was here a bit earlier. He was looking out the window and he spied another skyscraper being built. And I said, who's occupying these places? I mean, who would build an office block under these circumstances where we're told that people don't want to work in the city, well, nobody wants to work in an office? Well, who's building these places?
It's the creation of assets. It's a place to put your wealth rather than banks or currency. Mm. A lot of London is, of course, full of blocks of flats which nobody lives in.
Foreign investment.
It's there to be invested in rather than to be used.
Yes.
And it is astonishing the way in which the skyline of London has been turned into a cheap rate Chicago in the past, 20, 25
years. Here's another interesting story for you. I walk past the Guy's Hospital every single day, and the cancer unit in particular. And for about the last 6 weeks, they've been just putting up scaffolding. I mean, relentlessly. Every single day, they've got more scaffolding. And I'm going, where are they putting it? Are they like taking it up the top and then taking it down the other side? Turns out that they're removing the cladding from the cancer centre, which I can presume is a post-Grenfell scenario.
Yes. It's an awful lot of that stuff.
Yeah, but I've never seen so much scaffolding in my life. They've erected a wall. They've painted the wall. I mean, this
It will settle in for a long time.
This is your NHS at work.
Have you noticed how much longer building work now takes
than
it ever used to take? And also how very, very often you see a building run up new, and two or three years later it's got scaffolding on it again because it hasn't been built very well.
Right.
Starting. This is really, really common now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But they're still putting the scaffolding up, so whatever the job is that they're about to do, they haven't even started the job yet.
We used to say when I lived in Moscow, looking around, because everything was covered in rather crude timber scaffolding. Will they ever finish it?
Yeah.
Will Moscow ever be finished? And the answer was, of course, no.
Well, we used to say that about New York.
No, London.
Will we used to say that about New York when I lived there. You know, it'd be a great city when it's finished.
But they will never. It's just you're always going to have to walk in the road and all the rest of it.
Yes. Well, shall we talk about Lady Hussey?
I think we should talk about Lady Hussey.
What do you think about
her? Well, I'm fascinated. There was an interview which Miss Fulani gave about Susan Hussey to Michelle Hussain on BBC Radio 4, in which she said she was really concerned about doing the right thing and being kind.
Yes, cool.
And she also said that in her culture she had great respect for elders. I have to ask in that case, and this seems to me to be a great unasked question here, what purpose was served by making a public denunciation on social media? Was that either kind or considerate to an older person? Now, a lot of people say, why should it matter whether she's old or not? And I say to them, well, ask Miss Fulani that, because she herself has said that her culture, quite rightly, requires respect for older people.
And that would be the culture
Why was this method chosen and by whom?
But also, which culture was she referring to? Was she referring to the Hackney culture?
Oh, well, look,
because that's where she's
not
from,
I'm not going to get into that kind of thing. If she says her culture is whatever it is, as far as I can say, I don't mind about that. Mm. People can choose their own lives and cultures and even names if they wish to. I mean, that's not what bothers me. What bothers me is if she says that, if she believes what she says, then why did that happen? Mm. And I think I'd be interested if somebody would ask Ms. Fulani that. Or maybe I think she's supposed to be having talks with the palace or something.
I believe she's meeting the king.
They might ask her that.
I believe she's meeting the king.
Ask her that. Well, he knows her. We know that there's that picture of her from many years ago when she first met, more than a quarter of a century ago. So he might ask her, but I really do think it should be asked, because was this the way, even if... and the other problem about the story is I'm a great believer in the presumption of innocence. Now, of course, if it's just a row between people on the street or maybe in an office, which doesn't lead to anything, maybe don't make too much of a fuss. But if someone's actually lost a job which they plainly valued after many, many years of loyal service and indeed been publicly humiliated, then it seems to me you do need the presumption of innocence. And I've not heard any serious attempt to give Susan Hussey's side of the matter.
No. Nobody's given her side, really. I saw a letter in the Telegraph on Friday morning, I believe it was, from somebody who was a friend of hers, who knew her from the local church, who was speaking very well on her behalf, saying that, you know, she was a woman of some renown, that, that she did an awful lot of good things in her life. She's, I mean, her job basically was to talk to people who she didn't know. It seems extraordinary to me that she's been doing that for 60-odd years or something, and apparently has never offended anybody until now.
And so then suddenly it happens, yes, OK. And so there's that. What it seems to me is that the speed with which she was dispatched into outer darkness was not a sign. People said, oh, well, it's the palace is obviously getting its act together. It's really, you know, it's trying to make sure that its public relations works. Well, that's one way of looking at it. But it seems to me that the reason why she vanished so quickly is fear. The palace was not prepared. No part of the royal apparatus was prepared to say, hang on a minute, let's examine this, we need to look into it, we're not going to take any immediate decisions, because then they would have become the subject of exactly the same storm which engulfed Susan Hussey.
Right.
And they know that they no longer have the power. I think the late Queen could have done that, because she still had an enormous standing.
And she also had a very good way of dealing with these matters, didn't
she?
Sure,
but the thing is that I don't think Charles has that power. He knew instantly that he didn't have the power to defend her, even if she had a case.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she did, I'm not saying she didn't, I'm saying I don't know.
Right.
And I think if people suffer materially from a decision, then that decision should be taken by due process.
Yes.
And there hasn't been any.
No. And it's a bit reminiscent, isn't it, of some of those kind of media companies who just get rid of people immediately and just go, oh, that's it, you've got to go. You can't...
Well, then again, the point that people have been making over the weekend about Conor Burns, the MP who was accused of groping somebody in Hotel Bar, an accusation which has now been completely dropped and is said to have no value. He's still lost his job as a minister.
Yeah, absolutely.
For what?
And he wasn't
suspended or asked to know. There wasn't any hesitation. Immediately out, and will he ever get that back?
And you never remember the fact that he was completely and utterly exonerated. You only remember the fact that he left his office because of an allegation.
That is the problem. There's so little due process in our society at the moment. We have no protection of the sort which in a free and just country you ought to have. And I'd say I have no idea what happened.
And it literally was, as your headline said, cancelled by Twitter.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I mean, because we talk about that a lot, but actually this was the prime example.
The High Court of Twitter, the Supreme Court of the country.
Mm. Do you find Twitter any different at the moment, given Elon Musk's involvement?
Not particularly for me, no.
I don't. No, I find it just as hateful as it ever was.
I don't think it's... it doesn't seem to me to change in any material way, but let's see what happens.
Mm.
I suppose one could say it can only get better, but it could easily get worse.
Well, I was going to say, whenever I hear that, things can only get better, as they sang
in 1997. I
say this to my kids all the time. They're like, it can't get any worse. I'm like, it can, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter Hitchens is here. We'll come back to him with more.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. And lots of you have got plenty to say about the burglary situation. Also, a lot of you agreeing with Peter Hitchens on the whole front of Lady Susan Hussey. But let's talk a little bit about Ukraine, because it's another subject, Peter, that we visit from time to time.
Yeah.
There's a new book out, you were saying.
I try not to go on about it too much, though I do think it is the most important issue in front of us.
Yes.
A guy called Ben Abelow has written this book called How the West Brought War to Ukraine. The title itself shocking. It's very brief, very terse, actually a rather frightening book, because the picture it paints of the real danger of possible nuclear conflict is more worrying than any I've previously seen. You can buy it, or you can just get it on the web. It's available as a text on the web, but I do recommend it to people who've bought the current narrative, because it gives the long background of how this came about, including the very alarming developments in which the United States, this is the United States, the country which we look at as the exemplar of good behavior in foreign policy, ripping up major treaties about nuclear weapons, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty and Intermediate Nuclear Force treaties, which have actually increased in a rather remarkable and alarming way the dangers from missile deployment in Europe, on top of all the other things. And the comparison that he makes between the United States Monroe Doctrine, which pretty much says don't come near us, bastard, or we'll smash you to pieces, anywhere in the American hemisphere, and the behaviour of the Western nations towards Russia on the same balance.
Mm.
If I've said it so many times, but it deserves saying again, if Canada or Mexico allowed into their territory or proposed to allow into their territory, for instance, a Chinese-backed military alliance, what do you think the Americans would do?
Mm. Well, they wouldn't stand
by. They certainly
by
wouldn't do nothing.
No.
You don't really need to theorise about this. You look at what happened
in Cuba.
Cuba.
It
just tells you. And that nearly led to a nuclear war. People should take this more seriously. I just ask, because think of three great foreign policy crises of my time. Suez in 56, Vietnam throughout the 70s, Iraq in the early part of the century. Huge dissent, differing opinions all over the place. On Ukraine, absolutely nothing but a dead consensus. And if you, as I know from personal experience, if you actually divert from that consensus and don't follow it, almost nothing but defamation and smears comes your way. We aren't having a debate about what may be the most dangerous foreign policy issue of our century. And we ought to be having a debate. Mm. And I think that the Ben Abelow book would be a very useful starting point for a lot of people who've never really looked at it or considered what's going on.
It was interesting to me.
Very factual. It contains very little in the way of polemic. Just says, this is what these people have said. And it's not quoting Kremlin spokesmen.
Right.
It's quoting leading American politicians, military figures, and diplomats. And it's their testimony that he uses.
And does it go back to the point which I was picked up on, which was where Angela Merkel was offering the sort of the hand of the European Union to Ukraine and trying to get Ukraine to join the EU, which I thought was already an overstepping of
that actually doesn't feature. No, it's much more to do with the expansion of NATO and the gradual conformation of NATO of Ukraine into NATO as a military nation, but that particular it's very brief. It doesn't take long to read, but if you don't, if you've simply accepted the standard narrative of what's going on there, I think any intelligent person reading it would at least be given some disquiet and some food for thought about we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and it will.
That's
also,
all I ask, honestly. Well, is that we have a debate about it.
And also, you sort of need to have the debate before you can have any kind of conversation about how it ends, can't you?
You want to. Anybody can look up now. It's on YouTube, I think. Nye Bevan's amazing speech in Trafalgar Square attacking the Suez episode. Mm. A major opposition politician. Huge crowds listening.
Mm.
And the leader of the opposition went on the radio opposing it. Vietnam, endless. I remember it. I lived through it. Everybody shouting at each other, one side or the other. Was this right? Was it wrong?
Right.
Iraq,
huge
demonstrations on this. Total conformity. Nobody with any opinion but one. And I just think this has to be wrong in a free country.
Is that not where we are now, though, on almost everything? You know, we're now only now questioning the COVID narrative because people like Matt Hancock decided he wants to write a book about
it. Fantastic, isn't
it? I mean, sorry?
Did you see the wonderful passage in the Mail on Sunday serialisation yesterday in which Hancock gets a phone call early one morning in August, 2020,
I think, wasn't it?
I think, saying, do you know, I wonder if we've done it, if we've got all this wrong, Matt.
I mean, you shouldn't be laughing.
Well, he was
really
perfect. And the thing is that Johnson's perfectly right. They had got it all wrong. But he carried on going on about Hancock for hours and got nowhere. But the point that Hancock says at the end is, how could it possibly be that we got everything absolutely wrong?
Yeah.
Well, and they're so modest, aren't they?
He's just so
self-effacing. He never saw anything coming. He wasn't gifted with the gift of prophecy or anything. He was just a man overwhelmed by events. He's so you never realise from it that he, what a wonderful man he was.
No, and then Chris Whitty last week coming out and saying that there were now some excess deaths which could be put down to the actual lockdown.
Yes, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
Amazing.
Yep. And there we are. But we went over all that ground very, very thoroughly with spades and shovels and hose and rakes, didn't we?
Well, I seem to remember Neil O'Brien, MP, who was collecting a list of names of the recidivists and names of people who were not in agreement with the government.
I was on his little list.
And I'm not sure why he had that list, and I'm not sure what he did with that list.
Well, it's extraordinary, wasn't it? The government actually collecting a list.
And he was Matt Hancock's house elf, as he was known.
Yeah, he was a senior official in the Conservative Party.
Yeah,
but it was really quite spooky.
But he was doing Matt Hancock's bidding. I mean, I haven't read the diaries, I'm not sure I will, but I don't know whether Hancock gives him a mention.
I have missed it, if
doing
so.
Doing his
but
dirty
it's
work good, for
it's
him.
Well worth remembering that. that episode because it was, I thought, this is going too far.
Yes. Speaking of which, should we finish with the museums and what we're
doing? Yeah, you saw the Wellcome Trust closed the museum last week because it was in some way incorrect. And I went to visit a very favourite museum of mine, the once wonderful Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford. Mm. Actually, the subject of a poem by the great James Fenton, which he said it's the place where myths go when they die.
Right.
It's full of things like the earth from the grave of a man eaten by a tiger and some witch's hair. And it also used to contain a display of shrunken heads, which gave you the willies. Absolutely, I did. I remember as a boy going to see them, but my goodness, they made you think.
Yeah.
They've now been removed on the grounds of being incorrect. It also contains...
But when they say incorrect, what do they mean?
That's the word I use. They have, if you go there now, it's full of great posters and displays saying how wrong it all was that these things were ever displayed. It was, but people say it was racist and imperialist. But what it also contained was a spring gun. You know what a spring gun is?
No.
It's a device with a tripwire set to blow buckshot into poachers who wander into people's woodlands. It was from Oxfordshire in the 19th century.
Wow.
And they had this, it's still there, and they had right beside it, when I first visited, a notice saying, warning, spring guns and man traps. Yeah. It chilled the blood.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they've now separated, for some mad reason, I don't understand, the notice from the gun. And you don't get the impact at all.
Mm.
But it wasn't some kind of racist colonialist enterprise. It was just a very, very interesting, rather spooky, uncanny museum in which you would not want to be locked overnight.
No.
You'd give you the
list of your huge creeps. I love places like
that. A huge 60-foot totem pole dominates the exhibition. Everybody should go and see it even now before they make it any worse.
Amazing. Well, Peter, great to see you, as ever. A very eclectic mix of stuff there.
It's the best thing.
We will do more of that, of course, same time next week on Monday. Coming up next, though, we've got other stuff to do. We'll be speaking to many more of you, 0344 499 1000. And also, Martin Green, a professor, who's the CEO of Care England. He's going to tell us why the latest ruse by Sadiq Khan to make even more money off motorists is actually going to hurt the caring community. This is Talk TV.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Coming up, we'll be talking about a great many things, of course, including the online care bill, the online harms bill, I should say, because Alan Miller's going to be joining us. He's got plenty to say about that. Also coming up, we're going to be having the strike calendar, because we've got a new advent calendar which marks every single day that there's a strike, which means there's one every single day from now until Christmas, which seems a bit harsh, doesn't it? And Jeremy Carl's coming up a little bit later on as well. But right now, though, let's talk to Professor Martin Green. He's the CEO of Care England, because last week we made a lot of the story that Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, has decided to expand the ULEZ zone, that's the ultra-low emission zone, to as far afield as places like Orpington in Kent, out to Dartford over there in the north part of Kent, and the Dartford Crossing, which crosses over into Essex, up to Hertfordshire as well, and out west too, long and far away from the original bounds of the part of London which you would call central, to be fair. But what we want to ask about Martin Green for is because he's concerned, obviously, about people who are carers, people who need their cars to get from point A to point B to care for people, often on the outskirts of London, often nowhere near the centre of London, nowhere near a congestion zone, nowhere near where they should have to pay £12.50 for the privilege of driving their car. But unfortunately, now that is what they're going to have to do. Professor Martin, welcome to the show. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, very well indeed. Thanks for joining us. I mean, there's an awful lot of opposition to this particular plan, and I'm talking to an awful lot of politicians and both local London Assembly politicians and also MPs about whether this can be stopped, because it seems to me to be taxing the wrong people, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. And I don't think the mayor realises that a lot of people who need to use their car because they're in professions where you have to, for example, go from one person's home to another to deliver care or support, they're going to be adversely affected. And of course, they're not the sort of people who are paid at levels that they can buy new cars that meet the new emission zone. There seems to be no understanding of any of that by the mayor. And some of the things that he's glibly said, such as, well, they can use the scrappage scheme to buy a bus pass, or indeed that he's going to improve cycling in London. What he doesn't seem to realise is some of these people would be cycling 30 miles in the middle of the night. Mm. We've already seen the way in which bus services are now getting more and more fragmented. So often, in order to reach outer London, you've got to change buses. And if you're lucky enough to be able to find one bus that's on time, you might not get the connection. He doesn't also seem to understand that a lot of people in care are women, and if they have to use public transport, they might then endanger themselves having to walk from public transport to their home in the middle of the night or very early in the morning. So it seems to me that none of these policies have been thought through, or indeed there's been no impact assessment on how this is going to affect the most vulnerable people who are caring and supporting others in our community.
Yes. And the other thing that's come up time and time again whenever I discuss this possibility is that, you know, the enforcement of it might also be problematic for some people because, you know, not everybody's got access to a computer, not everybody is able to pay in advance or buy a season ticket or whatever it is they're going to be doing it, however they're going to be making you pay. And some people might fall foul of it as well because they sort of drive into it inadvertently, you know, for a short period of time without realising, you know. So there's all manner of sort of trap doors, if you like, that people can fall through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what the mayor doesn't seem to realise is that not everybody can deal with the cash flow issues of, for example, having to pay up front. Mm. And then if they do get the money back from their employer, it might not come until the end of the month, or it might come in different timeframes.
Yeah.
And people who are on low incomes, they haven't got the capacity to bridge these gaps because every single penny counts. Mm. And, you know, obviously the mayor talks about trying to support the most vulnerable, but there's no read across to his transport policy. I mean, I think the bottom line is this is about the fact that the mayor needs more money and he's just trying to find it any way he possibly can.
Yeah.
And it's not about air pollution, it's about income generation.
Well, clearly it's about propping up the organisation known as the TfL, which, as anybody can tell you, is an incredibly top-heavy organisation with loads of people working in there, not doing very much of anything and getting paid six-figure salaries.
Well, the other thing that's happened is we've seen some really challenging ways in which the cycle lanes have stopped, for example, cars turning left and right.
Yeah.
And so often cars are having to go much longer distances. That has an impact on the environment. And also, of course, it has an impact if you're having to buy fuel. Because if you're a care worker and you can't drive the car in the most efficient way to where you're going, you've then got extra miles to do. And the mayor seems completely incapable of understanding these things. Of course, it's not only care workers who are essential workers who are on low incomes. If you think about all those people who are supporting us all, having to work in the middle of the night so that we can get up, so that nod in the direction of trying to support them. I mean, for example, if the mayor had said, right, I'm going to provide a fleet of electric cars that people can access at a cheap price, or if the scrappage scheme had been giving people an electric car, particularly if they were an essential worker, that would have been one way in which he could make good on his commitment to the most vulnerable. But at the moment, all he seems to want to do is to make life more difficult and more expensive for people who can't afford that.
Well, I mean, above all, he should realise that we now live in a sort of 24/7 economy, don't we? People work all sorts of different hours. As you say, women in particular, maybe even working as nurses who need a car to get home, who can't rely on a night bus. I mean, night buses, generally speaking, in the centre of London, are an absolute horror show, full of drunks and all sorts of nasty people. And I don't even know if there are such things as night buses in the outer regions and the outer parts of sort of South and East London.
No, I think that's right, Mike. And I think one of the problems is that he's pushing these zones as far out as he can go, but he's not having an integrated approach to transport. So if, for example, you might live 25 miles from the hospital that you're working, your shift finishes at, I don't know, 4 or 5 in the morning, you've then got to get a bus and then you've got to change buses. So if you're going out perhaps to Kent, you might have to change buses somewhere like Woolwich. Mm. Well, are there buses where you're going? So I do think there is a real problem. And what we'll start to see is people who are working in central London services not doing that anymore and trying to get jobs nearer to where they live. And that will have a big impact on London, central London's economy.
Yes. So are you able to do anything about it, Martin? Are you putting together any kind of sort of campaign of sorts that we could endorse?
Yeah, I mean, we are campaigning against this, Mike, and what we've done is we've contacted the mayor's office. We've told them we don't think this is going to be at all helpful. We've made it clear some of the impacts, and so we'll continue to do that. I mean, the response from the mayor's office has been to talk about bus passes and cycling and really to ignore the problem. Yeah. And I do think that there needs to be some concerted action. And certainly as well, we would be happy to engage with other essential workers who will also find themselves in this same problem to make sure that they are protected, because also that is about protecting us all. It's about the most vulnerable who need our support.
Absolutely right. Where can people find you, Professor Martin, if they need to get in touch?
Just go onto our website, which is www.careengland.org.uk,
okay.
And then see how to access us from there.
Tremendous. Great to talk to you, Professor Martin Green, CEO of Care of In Care for England. That's a very important campaign, by the way, because there'll be an awful lot of people. We've spoken to many of you already, people who are, you know, sole traders, people who drive vans for a living, people who are plumbers, people who are builders, people who need a vehicle, who can't get around on the bus, who can't get around on a bicycle because they actually have a job to do, which involves them taking quite a few tools with them in order to do the job. I mean, it's ludicrous for this mayor to think that he can just keep squeezing money out of people and forcing them out of their cars onto public transport or onto some kind of bicycle. Just not practical, I'm afraid, at all. 0344 499 1000. The traffic now in the capital city is so ridiculous. It took me about the same time to go 3 miles inside London last night, Sunday evening, late afternoon, sort of 5-6 o'clock. Same time as it did to drive up about 45 miles from Sussex. Incredible. Absolutely amazing. This is Talk TV.
Fighting the good fight with all his might, providing a welcome dose of common sense for the common people.
Solid Talk.
Hot Talk.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
See it, hear it, think it. Talk Radio and Talk TV.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk TV. The skies have cleared a little bit. It's still very cold out there. It definitely felt incredibly cold on Sunday. I was down at the beach with the dog, Ziggy, of course, and it felt like it was about minus 10. It was that windy and that wind chilly. You know that way it gets? But the wind was blowing very, very fast off the sea and it was absolutely freezing. He, of course, was quite happy to go into the water. God knows why. Coming up a little bit later on in the hour, Jeremy Kyle's going to be joining us. We've got a little surprise for him. We're going to play him a little clip of a certain Mr. Kevin O'Sullivan and Mark Saggers last night from Kevin's show. Very amusing indeed. I've got this as well from Martin, who says, it really annoys me when the NHS want even more money. They just stop wasting money, reminding me I can have yet another pointless COVID vaccination, sending texts and posts. I keep getting texts as well. I got 5 last week asking me to go and get my latest booster. Yeah, thanks, but no thanks. I don't think I'll bother. Alan Miller's coming up. He's the co-founder, of course, of the Together Declaration. We're talking to him because today, later on in Parliament, the online safety bill returns after a 5-month delay. Alan's got some reservations, of course, about that. An awful lot of people have caused an awful lot of conversations about this because it's all about supposedly safeguarding people. It's all about, you know, illegal and non-illegal forms of exchange, whether or not you can harm somebody with something which isn't actually illegal. It's all a very complicated mess, it seems to me. And nobody can quite agree on precisely what should happen, can they? 0344 499 1000. We'll take more of your calls, of course, as well, about the burglary situation. It's an extraordinary call from our friend up in Scotland there, who said that he'd managed to kill 2 burglars in Chicago, Illinois, in the United States a few years ago, and nothing happened to him. He got put in Cook County Jail for a night and then they let him go. Because in America, you can actually shoot people and get away with it. Some people think that's wrong. I think if somebody's in your house and you're getting burgled, I think you've got every right to do it. But you can't do it in this country because if you do, you'll end up in prison. And that, for some people, I think is wrong. Here's one from John the Red Squirrel in Braintree. He says, fantastic show. You always make my day. Thanks for the heads up about the coffin factory staff going on strike. I will do my best not to expire before the 11th of December. Very sensible. Who knew that you could even go on strike? Who knew there was only one coffin factory? I mean, this radio show and TV show really is a font of all knowledge. Let's talk to Alan Miller and see how he's doing today. Alan, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Thanks for joining us. What's actually going to happen this afternoon in Parliament? They're going to debate the next stage, I guess, of the online safety bill. But for a lot of people, they hear about this, but they don't really understand the sort of the machinations of it. So tell us what's going to happen.
So, well, it's been going back and forth for some time. A lot of people submitted responses to it. We did. We had Francis Hoare, who's a barrister, write on it. Mm. The idea that you can have legal but harmful language that would be taken down on the basis that it was legal to speak, but it could harm people in some way, was, in our opinion, very, very draconian, very wrong, very subjective. Mm. That now is looking like that's coming out in that context. However, there is still, it's now what the government's doing, as it often does, is it's reverting back to the terms and conditions. It's allowing big tech to use their own terms and conditions, which are also linked to some other items. So where the interpretation is that something could be malicious, it's still open to subjective interpretation. And we've just seen what's happened with Twitter and the Twitter files, where decisions are being made on a subjective basis about what kind of things to allow and not allow. Mm. And as soon as you do things like this, and you fine or you encourage big tech and the state kind of get intertwined in terms of policing our language and what we can and can't say, we're in for a terrible time. Now, people have got concerns about young people, and you know, anyone who's got kids or people who don't have kids, there are significant concerns. The question for all of us is, though, and it's a bit like the lockdowns question, where there are concerns for some people, do we then make impositions and punish the whole of society, or do we try and work out sensible solutions? Now, the thing is, we should say, Mike, there are already laws and rules sufficiently in society, right? So this is one of those moments where you have a situation where the government, and also under pressure from the opposition, because some in Labour say they don't like the idea of free speech, it's very dangerous. You notice these conversations all come around the word safety is used all the time. They think the public needs to be kept safe because we're actually dim. We can't exercise decent judgment. Who knows, we might end up going to vote for something that they don't like. The whole idea is that somehow the patricians, the technocrats, whether it's the government or the opposition, they should be really the decision makers, the smart ones, the bright ones. Whereas we, the great unwashed, we shouldn't really be able to look at these things because we can't discern them properly. And actually, we may end up, you know, going crazy. They think many of us are rabid. We know that the discussions in the last couple of weeks paints Britain as though we're all like terrible. We all have very prejudiced ideas when actually Britain is very welcoming and very integrated and is, in many ways, you know, a great shining example of many good things.
Yes.
So I think one of the thing is that the impulse to regulate is very problematic. We see the flip side of this, Mike, with what's just happened with the government saying that they're going to have a free speech bill in universities and then rolling back on it and not actually doing it, because it seems now that the technocrats, and that's not just the government, it's also the opposition, it's everyone, it's people that for the last couple of decades have just been able to, have technocratic solutions, not have the public engaged, and certainly are not comfortable with robust debate, with criticism, with being mocked. Seems that they don't actually have a sense of the principle of free speech, and that's why Together Association, the Together Declaration, we're really keen on the public getting involved and making their MPs hear about this and the government. Mm. And we've had campaigns around it to push back. It's been partially successful, but there's a real concern that this bill will still become a censor's charter, and that's a real problem.
Well, the problem as well is that whenever we've seen the police being given, shall we say, discretion on certain situations, whether people have been offensive or not, or whether they should be arrested or not. You know, they've always got it wrong, haven't they? Every single time they go and arrest somebody for some infractione that they've perceived to be the case on Twitter, they've almost always had to apologise to the person and reverse whatever action they took.
It's very worrying that, you see, the thing is, Mike, that people have different tastes, and that's fine, right? But we don't have a right not to be offended in society. Mm. And it might be that something is really reprehensible. And there are many things I find really distasteful and disgusting. But, you know, we fought through many generations, and we stand on the shoulders of people who fought for the principle of tolerance and freedom of speech. And that means that we have to be offended at times because it's so important, because without it, we're not free. And, you know, we should remind ourselves that some of the most outrageous and offensive ideas at the time they came out, like universal suffrage, that women should have the vote, people of colour should have the vote. Those things were contested, and they were very, for some people, they were very offensive, right? The point is, often you have to offend people in order to get positive change. But sometimes people just gratuitously offend people, and no one particularly likes it. But you see, it's gone so far, Mike, as you say, that in every area, in education, in comedy, in broadcasting, actually at the palace, everywhere, you see, what you can say, speech codes, behavioral codes, you know, there's a limiting, suffocating impulse that rather than saying, let's have this discussion out, where do we all stand on it? What's the problem? What are the problems in Britain? Who are responsible? How do we solve them together?
Yeah.
That's the way that you really get to grips with things. And actually, in order for that to happen, we need to hear all the different ideas out there and shine the light of reason on them. That's the antiseptic, not having restrictions, controls and regulations.
Yeah,
that's
what. But also, problem with all of this, Alan, is it's very difficult to define, you know, because what might offend one person might not offend somebody else, and what might be harmful to some person might not be. I mean, I was watching last night, I was looking at Laura Kunzberg's show later on. I don't watch it live, I can't bear it, but I sort of feel like I should. But she was asking a question, I think, of Nadeem Zahawi, about racism in football, and saying, you know, well, what, for example, would happen if somebody, after one of the England players missed a penalty, sent them some bananas in the post? I'm going, well, one, why would you even come up with that? And two, as he quite rightly said, well, then they would be charged with some kind of racist act, because there is a law in place that protects people from racism. You know, so you don't need more laws in place or more definitions of what's harmful, even though it might be legal. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
Absolutely, Mike. And I think the thing is, this is also true of the policing bill, that we see that we have the right to congregate. We know how frustrated and furious many rightly are by people who are actually breaking the law. You know, they're disrupting. So, but there are laws there to deal with them. But the idea that then we then impose more laws, because actually some people might not want to actually deal with them, have a commitment to deal with them with the laws we've got already, is the problem, you see. So you get more and more regulation, the rest of us become more and more stifled, but we don't address the actual issue. And that's the point. And I think we have to say that there's a certain amount of resilience and robustness that we have to recognize within one another. Most people are very well intentioned, and even those that are not, that are disingenuous, we have to pay slightly a price for that. But the most important thing is, the last 3 years has seen so many people, academics, scientists, journalists and others, taken down for saying things, asking questions. And some of them may well have been slightly bonkers. Many of them were not, and very erudite. But the point is, when you start saying you're not allowed to say that, this isn't possible for people to hear, we then have lost the ability to speak freely. And we've got to uphold that in Britain. We can shine a light, like we did with the vaccine mandate and challenging that. We can shine a light around the world and say, you know, this is a really important thing, that we don't need big tech and government regulating how we speak. We have to be able to speak openly with everyone together, with our fellow citizens.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we were talking this morning about the whole diesel debacle, you know, that we were told by Gordon Brown and Ed Miliband that diesel was the cleaner fuel and that we should all buy diesel cars. And I asked John Rentzel, I said, who was it that gave us that advice? He said, oh, I think it was the scientists. And you go, well, there you are then. Look at them, they're not saying that now. Same with COVID, you know, science, follow the science. Well, you follow the science, and then suddenly they go, oh, actually, we got that wrong. But you were telling them they had it wrong at the time, but you got arrested, I'm afraid, and locked up for it, you know.
Well, absolutely. And the other thing we're seeing as well, what I'm very nervous about, excuse me, is
making you cough. You're so nervous.
No, exactly. Is the idea, excuse me, is the idea that we actually lock down cities for the environment.
So yeah. What's this is going on in Oxfordshire? This Oxfordshire sort of climate lockdown thing.
Indeed. So 15-minute cities, the idea that it's a C40, it's called 15-minute cities. And in Oxfordshire, they're going to implement a plan to have people only allowed to go outside certain zones for 15 minutes, and then there'll be fines and bans and impositions. So it's like this regulatory control. It's not a discussion about how to transform infrastructure or to improve things using, you know, it's all about nudge, regulate, impositions. Yeah. And this is not just in Oxfordshire. There's plans to do all sorts of things around Brent Cross and Leeds and across the country. It's why Sadiq Khan so excited about his ULEZ, even though so many people challenged it and said they didn't want it, like with actually low traffic neighbourhoods. And what's happening is, bit by bit, we're having these ideas that the technocrats that know best can impose their things on us and to us with this alleged idea of a story of what's going to happen. And I think the thing is, you need to interrogate the story. But that's why together also we're saying we need to take back democracy now. We need to say the public needs to get engaged, your viewers and listeners. We need to be able to hold our elected representatives to account. We need to put pressure on them and say, this isn't acceptable. This is not what we've signed up for. We didn't agree to sort of jettisoning our freedoms, to have a war on cars, to say that wealth creation is a problem, that we all have to have limits imposed on us. Where was this evidence? We're not accepting it. We need to take back democracy together.
Right, absolutely right. Well, listen, great to talk to you, Alan. Thanks very much indeed for pointing all of that stuff out to us. Alan Miller, co-founder of the Together Declaration. We'll be keeping an eye, of course, on that whole reading of the online safety bill coming up later on this afternoon in Parliament. I'm sure you'll hear about it on Ian Collins' show. Vanessa Feltz, of course, from 4. Jeremy Kyle from 7. He's going to be coming up very shortly to tell us what he's doing. He's got Mark Saggers in for a start, amongst much, much else besides. I'm on the talk at 9 o'clock after Piers Morgan from 8. So it's all going on. This is, of course, the Independent Republican Mike Graham. Nick says this: I got burgled and the memory still haunts me. He came into my bedroom and stole my mobile phone while I was sleeping. Luckily, the coppers got him and he pleaded guilty. My kids were staying with me at the time. It was very scary. Absolutely right. Well, it is. I think anyone who suffered from burglary is automatically feeling violated, even if you were actually not there. But if you are there, it must be even worse. Absolutely unbelievable. Terry in Ramsbottom says this quite rightly: who decides what is harmful speech? Good question. You certainly don't want the folks at Twitter doing it, or Facebook, or indeed in the government, do you? This is Talk TV.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.